Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. Thanks for checking out this podcast from Connecting Faith. You can hear the show live each weekday at noon Central Time, and there are many more podcasts for this and all our Faith Radio shows available online. Our web address is myfaithradio.com. And thanks for your gifts to this listener-supported ministry. Enjoy the podcast.
Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting Faith with Life.
Hi, welcome once again to Connecting Faith. I'm Neil Stavem. I always appreciate the opportunity to get together with you here over the noon hour and spend some time talking about issues of the day and getting a biblical perspective on life and faith. Connecting faith to life every day. That's not only a motto here for the program, but really for Faith Radio. And I hope that you appreciate that focus on a daily basis, and we're just glad to have you listening in. You know, if you're new to the area, maybe just passing through or vacationing, visiting friends, glad to have you listening in. You can find out more about us online at myfaithradio.com. It's myfaithradio.com. And speaking of traveling, this is kind of the season when vacations and travel are maybe at their peak. And today we're going to hear about, well, it was a little more than a vacation. It was really a pilgrimage. Almost like a pilgrim's progress for the 21st century. That's how one person described Jim Belcher's book called In Search of Deep Faith. The subtitle is A Pilgrimage into Beauty, Goodness, into the Beauty, Goodness, and Heart of Christianity. And I don't know about you, but I do love to travel. And so when I first saw this book, it just captured my attention. I thought, I want to read more about this. We'll unpack it here in today's program, as well as one of Jim's earlier books called Deep Church, A Third Way Beyond Emerging and Traditional. Important discussion just ahead, and so stay tuned to Connecting Faith. We're going to dive in deep today because we're going to talk about, well, a book from our guest. He's written a couple of books, the latest, In Search of Deep Faith, A Pilgrimage into the Beauty, Goodness, and Heart of Christianity. But before that, he wrote an award-winning book called Deep Church, A Third Way Beyond Emerging and Traditional. And, you know, we live in a world that has lots of sort of permutations of church. What should church really look like? How should it operate? You know, what defines a church and what needs to be included in that? And Jim has really dealt with the issue in a wonderful, deep way. And so we're going to talk about, is there a way that we can actually grow deep in our faith and experience deep church as a body of believers, because we know the old saying that, you know, the church, sometimes it's a mile wide and an inch deep, and we've heard that saying. So we're going to address that today. Let me introduce my guest. Jim Belcher is Associate Professor of Practical Theology at Knox Theological Seminary, and he's a founding and former lead pastor of Redeemer Presbyterian Church in Newport Beach, California. He served there for about 10 years. And he has authored the books we mentioned, In Search of Deep Faith and The Deep Church, A Third Way Beyond Emerging and Traditional, which won the Christianity Today's 2010 Best Book Award, Leadership Journal's 2010 The Golden Canon Award. And he's been an adjunct professor. He and his wife have four children. They live in South Florida now, and we are honored to have Jim on with us. By the way, we do have some copies of both of the books, and we'll talk about how. Want to give those away this hour as well. Jim, welcome to Connecting Faith.
It's great to be here.
Let's start with that, you know, the whole idea of not only deep faith, but deep church. I mean, there is that saying, the church is shallow. What does that generally mean?
Yeah, and that's a good question. When I took the term, it's kind of a play on words, isn't it? I mean, in one sense, it's a synonym for mere Christianity. C.S. Lewis is the one who came up with the term deep church, and he was using it as a synonym. He was trying to come up with a word to describe what his vision was, and he said, well, something like mere Christian or deep church. So in one sense, it helps us define where our unity comes from, how we get along with other believers, particularly when we have some theological differences. But on the other hand, right, I mean, whenever you put deep in front of church, people want to know, do you obviously mean deep as opposed to shallow? And I think that's part of it as well. I mean, my vision was to present a view of the church that could kind of counter a lot of the shallowness and the consumerism. And I quote Chuck Swindoll, who pastored for many years in Orange County, California, where I pastored, and he had said that churches out there tend to be, and people out there tend to be a mile wide and an inch deep. And so the churches don't have a lot of depth to them, a lot of solidity. Some of that is because we've cut ourselves off from the great tradition and the history of the church that goes back 2,000 years. We've tried to reinvent ourselves in an attempt to reach culture, to reach the people around us. And in doing that, we've, for the last 30, 40 years, we've kind of stripped away all the things that brought the depth and the roots and the tradition. It's interesting, though, that in the last 20 years, I think there's, and some of it was sparked by the emerging church, but some of it's even outside of that movement, or people are moving back towards the weighty things of church. And that's been an exciting trend. I attend a church here in South Florida that we're part of that is very similar. I would call a deep church, very similar to the church I pastored in Orange County. And they have, you know, it's filled with what I call skinny jean hipsters, because that's what lives in the center of South Florida. And they are flocking to a church that has this kind of historic depth, which is amazing to me.
Yeah. And, well, and you probably found that some in California as well, in Orange County, when you started. And maybe I'll invite you just so tell a little bit about your story. And maybe out of that, I was thinking about the old Sunday school chorus we used to sing, you know, Deep and Wide. And none of us necessarily knew what that actually meant. We just liked the motions, I think, probably. But so can the church be both deep and wide?
Yeah, I think it can. I mean, what we try to do is design a church or structure a church, both in its corporate worship and in its life together, that would reach four generations. So we always talked about we want four generations working and living and fellowshipping side by side. Because that's, I think, the vision of what the biblical vision of the church. I don't think we're supposed to cut it up into generations in order to give people the style or the preferences that they want. And so we very much wanted it to be that way. We also wanted a church that was very open to the non-believer coming in, who would feel very comfortable, who, even though he or she might say, wow, this is different, I don't know what this is, it's very welcoming. There's something attractive here. There's something that's pulling me in, based on, you know, the love and the depth that was there. So I think it can be both, and I've seen that happen in these types of churches.
Does expand a little bit more on that, because you talked about so depth pulling one in. I mean, you found that even as you say in South Florida, that there's a hunger for something deeper. Is that just a those that would be probably more on the relational side, the seeker side, say, well, it's just they're just looking for community, for relationship. But is it something more than that, that there's a hunger for something deeper?
Yeah, I think there's a hunger for something deeper, and we're often giving the shallow. And a lot of the times these churches, these big, huge churches that are attracting and growing, you know, growing from 0 to 10,000 in a year, most of it is transfer growth. Most of it is coming from disaffected evangelicals who are just looking for the next great thing. But it's not really, they're not reaching a very high percentage, in my understanding, in my opinion, of the true seeker, the one or the non-believer. So what we've seen, you know, in the churches that are being created here, these particular deep, what I call the deep churches, is that, you know, they are getting lots of young people who are unchurched, outside of the church, who are in the recovery movement. South Florida is really big in recovery. There's hundreds of Alcoholics Anonymous groups here, drug rehabs, recovery places. They figure if you put it in a warm place, people will come here to recover instead of Minneapolis or St. Paul, where it's freezing.
Yes.
So it attracts them here in droves. And there are a number of churches that are very successful at reaching them, and they're doing it through depth, actually, and they're doing it through what one might call historic liturgy. Because, you know, when they come out of very chaotic backgrounds, as so many people in our culture do, where there isn't, it's rootless, where there's nothing solid to hang on to, one of the attractions of the success of, say, an Alcoholics Anonymous program is that it's very much following a steps or almost like its own liturgy. So when they come into a church and they see that structure, they actually find that very comforting. They find that solid, and it's a place they can just take a deep breath and relax in. So it's not the depth that scares them away oftentimes, but it's if the depth is presented in a certain way, it can be very, very attractive.
Talking today with Jim Belcher, in a moment we'll talk more about In Search of Deep Faith, the pilgrimage into the beauty, goodness, and heart of Christianity, as we're understanding more about that. He's also written the award-winning book called Deep Church. Jim is a professor, associate professor of practical theology at Knox Seminary, and founded a former lead pastor at Redeemer Presbyterian Church in Newport Beach, California. Jim, I'm just curious to know, maybe before we take a break, has there always been this sort of tension between maybe open and sort of bounded churches that, I mean, can you go back in history and see examples of this, or is this something that's sort of a new tradition?
No, I think there's always the tension. I mean, it really comes down to, you know, what is the church in its relationship to the world? So there's always going to be people who say that it's a bounded set, that we need to stay away from the world, and we call people out of the world into the bounded set, more of a tribal view of what the church is. And then there's people on the other side who are very open to culture, very open to reaching it and becoming all things to all men, as it says in the scriptures, in a sense, really taking away anything that might be offensive to the world so that people will come in very easily. There's always been the tension between the two. And the question is, what's the biblical way, I think, of holding the two together? Yeah, it's a distinct community. We're a covenant community. At the same time, we are called to have a public face and reach out and be salt and light in the city. So finding that balance has always been a challenge for the church. And oftentimes it swings in one or the other direction. You know, in the last 50 to 100 years, it's fundamentalism on one side, liberalism on the other.
And now we've, I guess, over the last, 20, 30 years, what we call the emerging church, the emergent movement is sort of maybe the face of that, right?
Yeah, it was, although it's kind of, in some ways, the name and the movement has lost a lot of steam, in part because they didn't want to make it an institution. They didn't want it to make a movement out of it. And certainly in publishing, it's lost a lot of steam. But 10 years ago, I think, and maybe from 1995 to, say, 2010, there's a 15-year period where it was really setting the agenda, or at least people had to react to it. They were getting lots of press, and a lot of the books were being published and whatnot, and a lot of the energy at these conferences. And I talk about that in the book. What were their 7 or 8 protests, the things that they were having this, that they were most frustrated with in the evangelical world, and what the questions they raise. And I say in the book that I think there's a lot of the questions that they raise and a lot of the points they make were very valid and helpful. And some of those have been addressed, and the rest of the church, the existing church, has kind of worked through those, I think, in helpful ways. So I'm never against reforming movements or movements that kind of challenge people. I think it kind of gets the church moving and thinking about what it's doing, even if it disagrees. Even if you disagree with people in the emerging church, it's great to have somebody kind of push back, and it helps you refine your own beliefs and practices.
Talking about refining and understanding our beliefs and practices as the church, and maybe there's areas of reform. We're talking about it today with Jim Belcher. Jim is Associate Professor of Practical Theology at Knox Theological Seminary. He's written a couple of books, notable books, Deep Church, A Third Way Beyond Emerging and Traditional, and received award-winning book awards from Christianity Today and Leadership Journal. His latest, called In Search of Deep Faith, A Pilgrimage into the Beauty, Goodness, and Heart of Christianity, and we'll get to that as well. More with Jim Belcher in a moment.
Stay tuned. More of the best of Connecting Faith in just moments.
Give me your eyes so I can see everything that I keep missing. Give me your love for humanity. Give me your arms for the brokenhearted, the ones that are far beyond my reach.
Back now to the best of Connecting Faith on Faith Radio. This is a previously aired encore presentation.
How do we see the world through Jesus' eyes and offer a theological response to that. Invite people in. How do we make our churches inviting but also deep? We're talking about a third way beyond emerging and traditional. That's the subtitle to Jim Belcher's book called Deep Church. And Jim was a founding pastor at Redeemer Presbyterian Church in Newport Beach, California, served there for about 10 years, and co-founder of the Restoring Community Conference, Integrating Social Interaction, Sacred Space, and Beauty in the 21st Century. He is now serving as Associate Professor of Practical Theology at Knox Theological Seminary in Florida. And Jim, one of the areas that you address and that we need to talk about is sort of the whole issue of the modern culture, the postmodern thinker. And maybe just explain a little bit about the, I guess, sort of the two camps to say, well, the postmodernist doesn't, he's not looking for that, belief set right away. He wants community more. And that seems like those are sort of the two ends of the continuum. You're either believing a set of truths or you're looking about relationship. How would you describe where we are today, I guess, in postmodernism?
Yeah, I think it's, there's definitely, I discuss this in Deep Church where there's a question of whether you have to believe before you belong or do you belong first and then you come to believe. And what we're finding is that generally people, particularly if they're under 30, maybe even under 40, want to belong somewhere first and then they come to belief over a slower process. And so I think there's a need for churches to be able to welcome people into their churches and in their communities and let them hang around, experience it, ask questions, be a skeptic, be a doubter, but also learn to feel what it means to be loved by people, included, those sorts of things. And I think that's different than, say maybe 20, 30 years ago where it was, or even some churches today where if you don't have all your theological T's crossed and I's dotted, then you really can't be part of what we're doing. You have to have that right. Then you can join us. And they wouldn't say that right out, but that's the subtle feeling that's given. Instead of saying, no matter where you are on this journey of faith, come be part of us, part of our church, and we love them, and they see what Christians are like first, and they experience the love of Christ through people and through the worship, and then they slowly move to a place of commitment.
I remember in the book Deep Church, you talk about, you give an illustration out of the Australian outback in terms of just setting up wells as opposed to fences. Maybe just share a little bit about that. I think it's a good illustration of what the church needs to be doing.
Yeah, the illustration is, I think it's been a while since I've seen that. But whether we often put fences up around our churches to keep the sheep in and keep people out. But what they, in the outback in Australia, the ranches are so big that any type of fence would be useless. So all you do is you sink a deep well in the center where you want the livestock to come. And they'll never go so far away because they always know they have to come back to that well. But, and I think the metaphor is we need to sink that well, which is Christ, deep, that living water right at the center of our church. And that's not only going to keep believers coming back to it to be refreshed, but it also attracts the non-believer to the center.
There is a point, though, one needs to believe something, right? I mean, that isn't that been sort of one of the arguments? Well, we're so relational, community so inviting that we've sort of set aside the core beliefs.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. I mean, and that's the thing is Jesus is always calling his disciples, he's calling them towards the center. And eventually we see as he has people gathered around him for a number of years of ministry, but when he starts moving towards Jerusalem for the final death and resurrection, he begins asking people, what do you think of me? Do you believe in me? And I think that has to go on in churches. We give an example at the church that I'm part of, City Church in Fort Lauderdale, is these young people will come in, they'll experience worship, they'll be part of dinners and small groups and those sort of things. And then usually when they're ready, after a couple months, they will join one of the classes on Sunday morning. They'll take part in the Christianity Explored class, which is an introduction to the faith. And then they'll start asking questions, and then they'll come to faith. I mean, we just had a whole half dozen or so come to Christ in the last 6 months through the class because – but it didn't come right at the beginning. In other words, they didn't go to that first and then join the church. They were in the church for a number of months before they even went to the class, and then they believe. So there is a place in the church, even every Sunday as we do the Lord's Supper, where people are called to faith. So they're hearing that call even as they hang around and they're part of the community.
Yeah, you don't. You still call them regularly. That's not just something that gets. You don't purposely avoid that, right? You keep pressing in, inviting the call to a deeper phase, right?
Yeah, we call the Lord's Supper kind of the Presbyterian altar call, because every time the gospel's preached in the sermon, it's then reiterated and it's physically there in the call, and it's also proclaimed again. But there's also a warning there to believers. But there's also a challenge there to the non-believer to say, hey, if you're not ready for this, then don't come forward. But this is an opportunity for you to believe and to commit your life. And there's prayers in the bulletin that they can read, and they can actually come to Christ at that moment. And I've seen that happen over the years, where the first act of faith is coming forward for the Lord's Supper as a new believer that might have just taken place during the sermon or right after the sermon. But that's a regular, just like you said, that's a regular part. There's no attempt to shy away from the gospel, but we create such a loving environment that they're like, well, I'm not ready to believe that, but this is the coolest, hippest, warmest church I've ever been part of. This is amazing. And it's intelligent, and it's witty, and it's deep, and it's historic, and I'm drawn to this. I don't even know why I'm drawn to this, they might say, but I am. And it's through that kind of love that they're eventually brought. They're brought to a place of faith.
Remember, a number of years ago, authors like Jim Peterson, The Navigators, and Joe Aldrich, and others were writing about evangelism as a lifestyle, and it seemed to come up there that, you know, as we help others take a step closer to faith, that oftentimes we assume that we sort of bring church into the mix. Perhaps too soon, we've not really fully developed a relationship with someone, so we think, well, we'll bring them to church. The pastor will do the evangelism and the leading. We need to keep that in balance too, don't we? I mean, to bring somebody maybe too soon, can be ineffective, I would think.
I think that's right. I mean, I think that can happen. You know, some people are just ready. You bring them to church once, and that's all they need. But I don't think it's ever a bad thing to develop friendships with our neighbors, because most of the time, I don't know what the studies are. I think in certain regions of the country, if you invite someone to church, they'll come. But in a lot of places, they won't come. And their only connection to the church and to Christianity is going to be you, the believer. And you need to be involved in their life. And sometimes involved where you don't even say anything except love them. And you're there ready for when they go through a difficult time. I mean, I tell my students all the time, is you may not even have, they might not, your neighbor may not, or colleague or friend may not be open to hear anything. But if they know who you are and you're consistently there and you're loving them and you care about them, who are they going to go to first when tragedy hits or suffering comes? And it always comes at some point. They're going to turn to you because you are the most caring. The other friends that they have may be shallow or not there in their life. They're going to come to you. And you see this over and over again where that takes place. They're going to seek out the Christian because that was the person that consistently loved them throughout the years.
We're going to talk more about deep church and in search of deep faith with Jim Belcher. Jim is Associate Professor of Practical Theology at Knox Theological Seminary in Florida. He's a founding and former lead pastor at Redeemer Presbyterian Church in Newport Beach, California. He's written several books of Deep Church, A Third Way Beyond Emerging and Traditional, and In Search of Deep Faith, A Pilgrimage into the Beauty, Goodness, and Heart of Christianity. Both are from University Press.
Stay tuned. More of the best of Connecting Faith in just a moment. Back now to the best of Connecting Faith on Faith Radio. This is a previously aired encore presentation.
Our call as the followers of Christ is to go. Many times the church has sort of been all about come and stay, and we'll put a fence up around it, and here's what we believe, and until you believe that, you can't come in. Over the centuries, there have been reform movements I guess evangelical Protestants have been. I mean, the word Protestant, of course, has the protest in it. And over the course of years, there have been corrections and adjustments and changes. And today we're talking about maybe there's a third way between emerging and traditional. The book is called Deep Church from Jim Belcher. And we're also going to kind of transition into his latest book called In Search of Deep Faith, A Pilgrimage into the Beauty, Goodness, and Heart of Christianity. Jim is currently associate professor of practical theology at Knox Theological Seminary. And Jim, just want to get a couple of questions a listener asks, wants to know, how do we look at the depth of another church or maybe even our own church without being judgmental?
Yeah, I address that. That's really the kind of the last question I addressed in Deep Church was, I don't want this book to be one more thing that people read and then use to bang over the head of their pastors. In so many ways, I was writing this to encourage pastors and church leaders. But I say, if you read the book and you want your church to have more depth, then be part of it. Be part of the depth of the church. Don't run away or don't criticize it, but start a small group or start encouraging your pastor in different ways. Rally people around some of the ideas. Be a support to the church and not a critic. I mean, I think we've got probably too many critics in the country. So, yeah, I mean, that's the danger is that we're always knocking the church and not boosting it. And this is very much a book where I'm trying to boost the church and the pastors that run it.
Yeah, and encouragement to them. They need all sorts of encouragement. They have plenty of critics.
Absolutely.
I'm sure you've got quite a few scars too. But Charlene had a question about what constitutes church membership, and particularly as you talk about Deep Church, does that look different than maybe what it has in the past?
Well, when I was pastoring out in California, church membership had just died on the vine. I mean, there were churches that were very purposely against that and not including it. So the vast majority of the people that we were running into were from churches or had only known about churches where that wasn't an important part. So we are swimming against the stream. But I think church membership is important. I mean, we tell people, it doesn't really change the way we look at you, but it probably changes more the way the person looks back at the church in their commitment to it. And it's a covenant agreement where you're making a covenant to be part of this body of Christ and the church is making promises to you. So we always had, there's four or five promises when someone's joining the church that people are making to the church, and then there's promises that the church makes to them to be there for them and be part of their growth in the Christian life. But what we often found, too, is that when people went through the membership process and found out about the church, that we often would find out that they weren't even believers. They had attended churches for years but had no idea what the gospel was, what salvation was. It was nothing more than morality for them or a code of morality. And we would see people come to Christ through the membership class. And so it was a great tool for not only discipleship, for evangelism, but obviously it strengthens the bonds that we have towards one another within the church. And in this day and age where people just kind of pick up and leave, they hear one bad sermon. I heard a mega church pastor once say after he preached a controversial sermon, I'll probably lose 10% of my people after that sermon. And they will. They'll go to the next church instead of realizing, no, I've committed. I'm a member of this church. I'm not going anywhere.
Yeah. You had an opportunity to go somewhere, do a study season at Oxford, and in that came an opportunity to do some traveling to see some of the historical roots of the faith. Interested in just if you had maybe questions before you went and how In Search of Deep Faith maybe changed some of those or brought some answers to those questions.
Yeah, I mean, it was a season where we wanted to take a sabbatical and a rest. We had the amazing opportunity to take our family, our four kids. So my wife and four kids and I went and spent a year. And we spent the first 6 months in Oxford and then another 5.5, 6 months traveling around Europe. And we very much we certainly knew what we wanted, which was to go deeper into some of the heroes of my faith, some old, some in the 20th century. And we certainly had some questions about how community was developed, how faith was sustained, how people did heroic things in the face of incredible evil like the Nazis, you know, so Bonhoeffer and Corrie ten Boom and those sorts of things. So we were looking to be refreshed, to be encouraged, to be inspired, but we also were looking for a chance to help our kids develop what one writer calls an articulate faith, where they really knew how to articulate their faith. And those who can articulate their faith tend to own it more. And so we wanted them to be able to have a faith that they owned, that had depth, and wasn't kind of one-note Christianity, but kind of explored, the, as you said, the deep and the wide of Christianity. And so we had certain themes we wanted to introduce our kids to. So what we did is we kind of put those down on paper. So here are the 12 themes of Christianity we want to look at. And then we figured out, you know, what was the best way to organize those. And we didn't know that going in. And part of the book, and I don't want to give it away, is kind of how that came about and how we kind of stumbled upon it providentially, the direction we needed to go, where we needed to go, where the money was going to come from. I mean, that was part of kind of the serendipity, the surprise of travel. So we had some general ideas, but the way it evolved and the way it came out was a surprise to us, and you know, a pleasant surprise. It was incredibly exciting, and I think the reader who reads it, it's a travelogue, it's a memoir, it's biography driven, but I think there's a little bit of mystery too, like where's this going, and how's it going to end? And I think that's what pulls people through it.
Well, and the book's called In Search of Deep Faith. We've got some copies. Love to have you. Sign up for one. Would be happy to put it in your hands because it would be something that you would appreciate and can helping understand your faith and maybe even plan a destination at some point, perhaps. 877-933-2484 is our phone number, 877-93-FAITH, or you can sign up online as well. Give us a call or a question there online. It's myfaithradio.com and then the email link at Connecting Faith. Jim, as you talked about, this was something that your kids were young at the time. Say we want them to be able to sort of own their faith more clearly. But what did it do for you and your wife? You'd been pastoring for 10 years. Obviously, you had been thinking through a lot of these things, studying at Oxford. But talk about how it impacted and maybe changed you in some ways.
Yeah, I mean, when I went, I was pretty tired. I wasn't burnt out or angry at the church. I mean, we left because we had just gone through about 16 or 17 years over spanning two churches where we were pretty wiped out, raising four kids, redoing an old house. I had just finished the first book. It had been out about a year. And we needed to kind of regroup and recharge. So I think I was at a place where my desire was fairly depleted and fairly low. And I needed to be re-inspired. I needed time to sit and read some of the great heroes about their faith, walking their steps. One of the people we look at is C.S. Lewis. We spent a whole month kind of walking the Lewis Trail in Oxford and going to different places. We spent time at the Kilns, which is his home, for over 30 years. I got to spend an overnight in the C.S. Lewis bedroom, reading his stuff while I was there, thinking about it, sharing the Narnian Chronicles with our kids, just kind of absorbing it. It had a tremendous impact on me. I mean, it was incredible. It was like being re-mentored all over again. It was like hanging out with these amazing friends who strengthened my faith. You know, Bonhoeffer's got this great phrase in his book, Life Together. It's Dietrich Bonhoeffer, the guy who ended up dying at the hands of Hitler because of Bonhoeffer's involvement in some of the assassination plots. But Bonhoeffer has this amazing line in Life Together where he says, "We need others because there are times in our Christian pilgrimage when the Christ in others is stronger than the Christ in us. And we need those friends to speak Christ into us when our faith is weak. And in the same way, those people need us because there's going to be times where Christ seems weaker in them, and they need us to speak Christ into them." And that's really the power and beauty of community. When we're down, when we're discouraged, when we're tired, we need others praying for us, speaking God's word to us, encouraging us, listening to us. And then we're going to return the favor when we have friends and people in our church who are down. And I think for me, that the year away was that. These were people, these 10 to 12 different heroes of the faith spoke Christ into me. in ways that were just simply life transforming. And what I've tried to do now is then through the stories is let people live vicariously through our experience and experience that in a little way by reading these stories, reading the story of my family, and in a sense being mentored, re-inspired, reinvigorated through it.
You know, as you had, as you said, the book Deep Church had been out a year or so, and you'd been pastoring for, you know, 10 years. You've been thinking about, you know, what does it mean to really have a church that's inviting but still has core beliefs? I mean, did you, as you looked at some of these heroes of the faith, did you find insights into maybe how they did church or what was maybe attractive about their lives or the way that they operated?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I mentioned Bonhoeffer. Bonhoeffer provides a really great example of the power of community, particularly when he was a seminary, a director of an underground seminary, and the kind of community that they had developed far away from where the Nazis could see them in secret, and as they were training pastors, and they had other graduates living in that community. There are some powerful examples in there for pastors on how to disciple people and how to reshape people. I talk about the story in South Central France during World War II, where a small village up on a high plateau called Le Chambon, and how one of the pastors led their congregation and was inspiring to about 10 or 11 other congregations on that plateau to hide and harbor Jews during World War II. And by some number, some statistics, they successfully saved 5,000 Jews, mostly children, by smuggling them out of France, hiding them on farms, keeping them away from the Nazis. And it's an incredible story of the power of a community to be rescuers and to be, it's, you know, we call it the conspiracy of goodness, that they did something that was unprecedented, where they were at great risk to their lives, but they were inspired. You know, the heart of the movement was the Protestant church at the center of town. So, you know, examples like that to me, and these were deep churches that were doing amazing things.
You know, we have churches today that are very much focused on, you know, social justice issues. So is it the same, do you think, as it was then? I mean, there were many circumstances, it seemed like, where the light was in danger of being snuffed out completely, yet it was men and women of courage who said, you know, standing up in the face of severe opposition.
Yeah, that's right. But, you know, one of the things when we were up in the mountains in France, and we were talking with one of the local historians who's an expert on this, he said, you know, I want to make it clear that these were people who were not simply interested in social justice because they wanted to be good people. These people were interested in social justice. They were good people because they knew Christ. And at the center of what they were doing was an Orthodox faith that inspired them to do it. It wasn't just that they had a proclivity to helping people, or they wanted to do a just thing. They were doing the just thing because they had lives; their lives had been transformed and changed. And he very clearly wanted me to understand that.
Talking today with Jim Belcher. Jim's associate professor of practical theology at Knox Theological Seminary, and he's authored several books. The one that we're referencing at the moment is called In Search of Deep Faith, A Pilgrimage into the Beauty, Goodness, and Heart of Christianity. Some amazing stories of the roots of our faith, and we're going to talk more about how we can rediscover them and some lessons for us today. We'll talk more in just a moment. Take your questions just ahead.
Thanks for joining us for the best of Connecting Faith. More in just a moment. Welcome back to an encore presentation, The Best of Connecting Faith, on Faith Radio. This is a previously aired program.
We're pursuing a deep faith today. That's our discussion. And thanks to Jim Belcher for giving us some great insight. He's written a couple of books, Deep Church, Third Way Beyond Emerging and Traditional. It's a book that will be a great encouragement to maybe your pastor, or if you're in church leadership, or just want to understand more about what it means to really have core convictions and yet be involved in community and inviting. and just understanding how God calls us to do church today. And he's also written In Search of Deep Faith. It was his experience with his family, having the opportunity to travel into Europe and see some of the great road markers, I guess, on our faith journey from the great heroes of the faith and generations before. Pilgrimage into the Beauty, Goodness, and Heart of Christianity. And Mark's on the line with us, calling in from Oakdale, and has a question about maybe encouraging deep faith on others. Mark, you're on with Jim Belcher. Go ahead.
Hi there. Thank you for taking my call. See, I grew up in a good-sized family, and I have one sibling who's kind of wandered away from the faith, well, quite drastically. And my children are adults now, and I have one child who is, and he and his wife are kind of going that direction. And I was wondering, as a father and a brother, what kind of things can I do to encourage them to return to a biblical Christianity?
Yeah, I mean, I think we all have, we've grown up in the Christian life. We're going to have people in our family or in churches and people we know that are in those places that you described. And it's tough. I mean, it's a hard situation. I mean, I think the most important thing is prayer. Praying consistently for them, praying fervently for them. I don't think we can downplay that. Loving them, being there for them. I mean, at some point you want to continue to love them in a way that when they go through a difficult time, they eventually make the journey back. I grew up, in my case, my brother and I made a faith commitment at a very similar time in high school, but when he went off to college, he fell away and was away for many, many, many years and was very hostile to the faith. And what I tried to do is just simply, I mean, he knew where I stood, but continue to love him and be an example of Christian charity to him so that when he hit rock bottom and he needed some place to go, he eventually returned. The relationship was restored, and then a number of years after that, he came back to the faith. But it's, you know, that you want to be able to. Not, I mean, the last thing, they already feel guilty about where they are. So the more they sense the judgment from who you are or what you say, then it pushes them further away. And you want, really what they need to be is drawn back to that well. They need to see the beauty and the goodness and of Christianity and almost be inspired back to it. So I don't know if that's helpful. Hopefully that's helpful.
Yeah, I remember you were, like in the book Deep Church, you're talking about the importance of sort of preaching the gospel to ourselves regularly too, that we, you know, the more we can remember our need of, you know, grace and the covering of our sin is important for us in dealing with others too, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think that if we truly understand the gospel, it's impossible for us to look down on anyone. I think that includes our children or siblings, because we realize that we're in the faith. We remain in the faith because he's kept us in the faith. Our Heavenly Father has kept us in the faith. And so we have to be very, very careful not to just wag a finger at those people or the people who move away, but figure out ways to love them and inspire them back to it. Because I think at some point they're going to realize, and hopefully they do, is that living outside of the blessings that come within the Christian family pale in comparison. But sometimes there's people for a season that have to go out and find that out, unfortunately. And I think that's hard for parents. And we wonder, will they come back or are they going to keep wandering away? And I think those are the hardest moments.
Patty had a question about sort of starting the early church model. And I mean, as you were starting your church and as you've reflected a lot on it, are there some lessons we could take there? Obviously, there's a pretty significant movement. Frank Viola and others have written a lot about the home church movement. But what are there some principles from the early church that we should take today?
Well, yeah, but not, you know, the danger is that we do that. What's so often happened in the church over even the last 2,000 years is that we go back to a golden age and we say at AD 80, that's where we've got to go look, or AD 120, that was the pinnacle, that was the high point, and then everything fell from there. And it's this idea that somehow that there was a golden age that we can get back to. And I think what that does is it often, it shortchanges what God's been doing in history. that somehow we've ruined the church since then, instead of realizing that God has been shepherding and providentially and sovereignly looking over his church from day one all the way to we are, and the growth that's taking place and the new insights that have happened are because of him. I think it was Tom Oden, the theologian, who said that church history really is the history of the Holy Spirit. It's the history of how God has protected and shepherded his church. And even though the gates of hell have tried to destroy the church throughout history, it's still here. And there's still believers, and it's still growing, and it's still spreading around the world. And so for us to say, oh, there's nothing, we can't learn anything from, say, the last 1,800 years, we have to go back, or 1,900 years, we have to go back to that first 100 years. So let me say that first. But second, yeah, there's always lessons that we can learn from the early church all the way up throughout, even the medieval and reformational times. There's wonderful things. We call it the great tradition, how God has shepherded and taught his churches. We call these inherited practices of the faith. So certainly, yes, there are things we can learn from the early church, but there's things we can also learn from the medieval church and the reformational church and even the church over the last 100 years.
Jim's learned a lot along with his family in search of deep faith. It took a pilgrimage into the beauty, goodness, and heart of Christianity. We've got a couple minutes left, Jim, but just maybe a word for those that maybe can't do a pilgrimage to England or Europe to see some of the markers of our faith heritage. What do you recommend so that we maybe appreciate more the great chain of grace that we're part of?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a sense that I want people to read the book because I want them to vicariously experience and learn from what we went through. There's lots of times in life that we can't leave our situation, but we can learn from other people's travels and experiences. I mean, that's the wonderful thing about reading. And so I think they can benefit from that. But what I really want them to see is that the three pillars of pilgrimage is that the need to rediscover our roots continuously, that second, that life is a journey that needs a map, and third, that we need to know our destination. Those things can happen in anyone's life, anyone's family, anyone's town at any moment. And there's ways of discovering those things that aren't necessarily linked to the journey that we took, but can be linked to a pilgrimage right in your own town. And there's learning experience and things that parents can do or individuals can do to bring those things alive. So live vicariously through our story, but more so learn that you, each reader, is on their own pilgrimage and that God is with them right wherever they are, and regardless of what town or what city they live in.
And it seems like you want to bring others along, kind of experience that journey together too, right? Because community is one of
absolutely
the keys. Yeah,
absolutely.
Review those three pillars again for us.
Rediscovering our roots, which is a continual thing. Learning that life is a journey that needs a map. We need a map on the journey. And then third, the need to understand our destination and where our hope comes from. And those are really the three parts of the Christian life. I mean, and so what we do in the book is I take three or four of my heroes of faith, and I let their story lead us into those truths and help us to understand those points.
Great insight, and well worth your time to read and to be encouraged and to allow your faith to grow deep and to celebrate what God has done through the great tradition. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to add, if people want more information or to see some of the promotional videos we made, they can go to jimbelcher.net, and they can see those there.
That's jimbelcher.net, B-E-L-C-H-E-R, jimbelcher.net, and you can find out more information about his books, In Search of Deep Faith or Deep Church. And Jim is Associate Professor of Practical Theology at Knox Theological Seminary in Fort Lauderdale. Previously served as the founding church planter and lead pastor of Redeemer Presbyterian Church in Newport Beach, California, and has authored these great resources from InterVarsity Press. I recommend them to you. And if you missed part of today's show or want to just go back and review a portion of it or pass it on to a friend, all our podcasts are easily shareable and accessible. You go to our website, myfaithradio.com. That's myfaithradio.com, and then click on the Connecting Faith show page, and we've got the podcast of today's program. We'll get that up, and other programs that you've heard in the past. And by the way, if you've heard programs that have particularly challenged you or interested you, we always appreciate getting feedback and comments, or maybe there's a topic you'd like us to address
and have a guest or a book you'd like us to review or recommend, you can always contact us on our comment line. It's the same phone number. It's 877-93-FAITH. That's 877-933-2484. And then you can press 2 to leave a comment on our Faith line. That's available. It's a voicemail box available 24 hours a day. So just let us know your feedback, your comments. I always love to hear it and appreciate you listening every day to Connecting Faith. Well, now stay tuned for A New Beginning with Greg Laurie coming up after the news at 1. And then listen for Live the Promise today at 3 as Susie Larson talks to Leslie Vernick. We're going to talk about healthy relationships and how we can get out of destructive relationships. This is an important topic we'll get to this afternoon at 3 with Susie Larson on Live the Promise. Thanks for listening to Faith Radio.